Hi, and welcome to the Interviews with the Masters, brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com, your number one spot for inside information and quality gear. Today we have with us on the phone a guy that I've actually followed for quite some time, growing up in the Northeast. You heard a lot about him. I'm just going to get to it. This is Hal Blood. And Hal, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you?
I'm awesome. I can't complain. I've had quite the interesting day. I did another podcast this morning, and I had Randy Ulmer on the phone. It's been a star-studded day for me.
Great.
So Hal, my listeners rather are West Coast guys. So I'm going to give them a little bit of background about you, but then I'm going to ask you to fill in the pieces. So how, if you back east, or specifically in the Northeast, the forests are like boreal rainforests, or not really rainforests, but they're boreal forests. They're very dense, thick, big woods, we call them back there. And a tactic made famous by that region of the country for harvesting deer is to track deer. And Hal is one of those guys that kind of brought that to light. Him and there's a family by the name of the Benoits that were really popular for this type of hunting. So I brought Hal on so you guys can understand some different tactics. And these are things that I learned as a kid. I did a lot of still hunting. We did a lot of like tracking and stuff like that in the snow. And if you can imagine like chasing lions with dogs, except for the fact that you're the bloodhound, and Hal's the bloodhound, and he's not treeing a lion. But it's a similar concept. You cut a track and pursue the animal that way. Anyway, so Hal, give us a good rundown about yourself and what you do and some background on you.
All right. I grew up right here in Maine, actually grew up in southern Maine, and I moved north 28 years ago. But I started hunting when I was a little kid with my father. My father hunted a lot, and I got started with him, but he wasn't a tracker. He was just your average guy that puttered around. He'd sit on a stump, do some still hunting or whatever. But he took me with him when I was little. I mean, I remember going, 6-7 years old with a toy gun. He'd take me once in a while. So, that got me going and interested in hunting. And then when I was about 10, my grandfather had beagles, and I started rabbit hunting with him, because in Maine, you have to be 10 before you can start carrying a gun. But anyways, started doing a lot of rabbit hunting and, of course, deer hunting too, but just got crazy about it. And hunting, fishing was all I ever wanted to do. So I went in the Marine Corps for 4 years, and when I got out, I was always trying to figure out how I was going to make my way in life and make a living. So I wanted to be a guide, outfitter and stuff, but didn't really know how to go about it. So my father-in-law was a lobsterman, and so I learned that from him and did that about 10 years, and bought a piece of property up north and started building a set of camps and became a guide and started outfitting. And I focused on the deer hunting because that was my favorite thing. I had to, I bear hunted. We did moose hunts, bear, upland, everything. But mm-hmm. deer was always my passion, this white-tailed deer up here. And it got me guiding, got me in the woods the whole season and taking other hunters, and I enjoyed it, but got to learn a lot being in the woods for all those years, whether I was hunting on my own or hunting with clients and stuff. and just studied the deer and learned from them. That's basically how I learned most everything, was just following deer around, looking for sign, trying to analyze it, figure it out myself, trial and error. And that's it.
You pretty much, to do what you do, you have to be a behavioralist. You have to really understand the behavior of white-tailed deer to be successful at what you do.
Especially tracking. I mean, you can go still hunt, you know, and look at the sign and stuff, which I do, and I always have, because we don't have snow all the time. I mean, you wait for snow and pray for it, but if there's no snow, you're going to be still hunting. I never could sit in a stand. I've never done that. I put clients in stands, and they were very successful at it, but I'm either still hunting or tracking if there's snow. And, yeah, you get to learn about them, but tracking is, it's a difference. What I call a difference in tracking, there's people that will follow tracks, and then there's trackers. To be a tracker is when you understand the animal, you get in the mindset of that animal you're tracking, whether it's a deer or it could be an elk or it could be the mountain lion. It could be anything. But you've got to think like they do and understand where they go, why they do it, and what they're up to. And you can read it in their track once you learn it. The track tells you everything what they're doing. And then you become a tracker. Then you go to that level.
Now, how do you go about learning that?
How you learn
the behavior, learn how to think like them.
Well, a lot of it's going to be, I tell people now, you can get some shortcuts, because I didn't have anybody to teach me this stuff, so I just did it trial and error. And I always tell people when I talk to them, don't get discouraged about not going out and shooting a buck tracking the first year or whatever, because I fumbled around for about 7 years before I killed my first buck tracking. I mean, I killed bucks still hunting or other ways, but it took me 7 years to kill my first one tracking up north. So I just had to learn it. And once I did, it became, I don't want to say easy, but it became easier for me to be more successful. But now I've written a couple books on it, and I've got some DVDs on it, so people can, they're interested in seeing the stuff, they can kind of get a shortcut around a lot of that learning curve I had to go through.
That's how I came to know about you specifically, is I read one of your books about 10 years ago. I'm trying to remember which one it was, but
10 years ago was I think I wrote the second one. It's going on 10 years now. And the first one was 3 or 4 years before that, then we made a couple of DVDs on it. One's an informational one, puts a book into visual, and then there's one that's some action going on, actually out doing it, a lot of it shooting bucks and.
I said I've seen bits and pieces of it.
Yeah. So basically what it developed into is, I turned it into a business. Big Woods Bucks is my business. I have a partner in that. And it's basically a system. I put together a system of, it's an educational system, I guess you'd call it, but it's also, we have the proper gear, equipment, whatever, clothing. It's all part of that system to hunt in this type of woods, or track or everything. Because if you're not equipped right for it, you're already got your
behind
odds
against you.
Yeah. You got to be prepared for the type of hunting it is. So, but anyways, I've got a system developed for that, and it's actually quite easy to follow the system, And a lot of people are having good luck with it. I get calls or emails and messages all the time. People got their first buck tracking, or they got their first buck over 200 pounds. Or I get messages like that about every day. So it's good. It's rewarding for me that people are learning,
You just said something that reminded me. because I haven't heard that in a long time. It's funny. So, like, back east, especially in the Northeast, they really, like, you know how, so in the West, they're always counting inches. You know, it's, oh, it's 130-inch buck, 140-inch buck, whatever. Back east, it's, oh, he was a 220-pound buck. Or he's a 10-pointer. You know, they go by points. It's funny, like, how that, how where you're from is different. So I live in Arizona now, and I've been living here since 91. So I grew accustomed now. Most of my hunting has been done out here. Because now, technically, I've lived out here much longer than I lived. I was 16 years old when I moved, and I'm 40 now. So 24 years over here. How different that is. But every time I talk to people from back home, they're like, oh, yeah, you know, I saw a 10-pointer, or I saw this buck, he was by 250 pounds. You know, it's like, you know, it's not, it's a different mindset. I love it. So,
yeah, but I think it's basically, the reason for that is you don't get to, in the forests of the Northeast, you're not going to count any points, mm-hmm. a rack. You're not going to be able to size up a rack before you shoot. If you did, you'd probably never get a shot at one, because they ain't,
right.
It ain't that easy to see one, let alone sit there and, you know, determine the length of the points and the spread. You just, there's no time for that.
What, yeah, we're big, interested big body, in shoot it.
Yeah, we're interested in shooting a mature buck, an older buck, and what it's got for antlers. If it's got a big set of antlers, it's just a bonus, that's all.
Yeah.
You know, so like in Maine has the biggest bodied ones by far in the Northeast. I mean, you can get a 200-pound buck, and that's dressed. Out west, I know, in the Midwest, all the weights are actually live weights, too, usually. You know, people are talking about live weights.
Yeah.
But here we talk about dressed weights with all the internal organs out. So if you shoot a buck that that field dresses over 200, that's a big buck. You know, he's 250 on the hoof, and they're nice bucks. And then you get one that's up in the 200s, and then you get a buck that's over 300 on the hoof, you know, just big deer. And they, you know, get those big mature deer quite often. They don't have a big rack, but we don't care. You know what I mean? It's about
right.
a mature buck wherever you're at. And you can't determine the antlers very well by the track. I mean, sometimes you can see the antler marks in the snow if they're feeding, but some of them, the way they're shaped, they don't even leave those antler marks. So
right.
We just go by the track mostly, you know.
Yeah. Well, so I got some questions for you. I want to dive into some of what you do, basically. What are some of the tactics you can use? Obviously, this is a system you sell, and I don't want you to give away the whole school here. But, you know, give us a good overview. Be specific on some stuff of what, you know, take us through a track, so to speak.
Oh, you mean, you know, but from getting on a track?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right. So first thing I do is, you know, I want to find a track that of a buck that I want to follow. That's the first thing. And I tell people, if you're new at it, don't worry about how big of a buck it is. Start following tracks and practice, because if you're trying to practice on the biggest bucks in the woods, the old mature ones, you're going to get mm-hmm. discouraged, because guess what? They're the smartest ones. They've been
right.
followed a lot of years by coyotes and bobcats and people, and those aren't the easy ones to kill. But that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a buck that's got a print at least 3 inches wide, three and a half inches long, that I can see his dew claws are wider than the width of his print. That's what I'm personally looking for. Now, if you see one, and again, it's, you got to put in perspective, because I've hunted in Montana and out west for whitetails, and the feet on the deer are not as big. It's a different subspecies of deer, so you would be looking at a lot smaller one, like a 2.25 or 2.5-inch track. But here, mm-hmm. these northern borealis whitetails, northern Maine up, northern New Hampshire, Quebec, New Brunswick. They've just got a bigger hoof.
Right.
But that's what I look for. And then I want to see if he's dragging his feet. If a buck's dragging his feet in like an inch of snow or just a little snow, if he drags his feet, that's an old buck, old mature buck dragging his feet. And I look at the length of the stride, and I don't put a lot into that because they walk at different paces. But, you know, if you get one that stride that's over 2 feet between the tracks, that's a good big buck. But I really look at the width. I call it the stance. You could call it the stagger. Side to side between the feet, width-wise, so
right.
The width of the body. You know, 8 inches is good. 12 inches is real big. You know, you get one that's 12 inches wide from side to side on his prints, you got a real big one. So when
right.
I find the one I want, a lot of people, if you've heard about it, a lot of people try to pick up a track from driving the logging roads because there is a lot of logging roads in the north. I don't do that. If I pick up a track on the way to where I'm hunting, that's fine. But I like to go in the woods and pick my tracks up in the woods because, quite frankly, those big old bucks, a lot of times, they don't like to cross the roads unless they have to.
Right.
They'll go around the end of a dead-end road. They'll parallel a road. But I go in the woods and look for my tracks because when I get there at daylight, wherever I'm going, I'm already hunting. I'm not driving around in the truck trying to see if I can find a track to get on. So I'm in the game. I feel I'm in the game. I walk through the woods, cut the ridges the way I need to, up over the mountains, wherever I need to go to try to find a track.
Right.
And that's what I do. Then I get on it, and I call a fresh track any track that is made the night before. It might be 3 hours old, or it might be 10 hours old, but I don't care because if I get started on that track in the morning, I can catch that buck that day. He might be half a mile away or he might be 10 miles away, but I can cover that and catch up to him that day. I just have to move fast. So that's
right.
What I do. I move fast until I feel I'm getting where he's either bedded down or whatever, if he's interacted with does, whatever he's doing, it's all written down in the track. But I make a lot of time until I feel like he's going to be close before I even slow down. And quite often it's too late. I bump into him and get him up and going, but I don't care about that because now I got a deer that's right in front of me. I know I'm not hunting a track that he's a mile from me, you know, or 10 miles.
Now, go ahead. Sorry, keep going.
And that's just the game. Then it's a matter of trying to outsmart them, outwit them, catch them looking, do the right thing, you know, whatever it is to get that shot at them.
What do you do to determine the age of that track?
That's really the hardest part because it's almost like you've got to have a weather computer in your head. You've got to determine how cold was it in the night. Because it might not have been cold. Sometimes you have snow and it stays warm in the night and it's actually melting. But as soon as a deer makes a track and steps out of it, that track begins to age, whether you know it or not. I mean, it's subtle, but there's always an aging process. It's either melting or freezing. And then you have to determine the age by the temperature. If it's 40 degrees, it won't melt as quick as if it's 50 degrees. If it's 25 degrees, it'll stay better than if it's 10 degrees, you see, because when it gets colder, that dry snow evaporates around the edge of the track. So I look at all of that, and then really the easiest way for me to determine it is as soon as they step in water, and the woods is quite wet here, so you're not going to have to go very far before they either cross a little stream, a trickle, or step in a wet spring hole in the woods where I can get some ice and see how thick the ice is in the track. And again, you've got to kind of figure by the temperature how old it is. You know, if it's really cold, if it's zero and that track's got a quarter of inch of ice in it, well, that's not very much, because that only takes about a half an hour, you know. You know, if it's froze right to the bottom, then it's older. But it's just really, and all of that is only, the only way you can do that is from experience. You know, I could tell you all the formulas I use, but until you go out and feel the track and look at them, it's hard to do it.
Of course. Yeah, it's definitely something that comes with time spent doing it.
Yeah. When you come the time and you do it. I mean, I've tracked thousands of bucks over the years, so I've got a pretty good sense of how far behind them I am.
Right. Right. Well, while we're on the actual track and stuff, I mean, this is something I think any hunter will want to know, whether they're tracking them or just looking, you know, scouting or whatever. How are you determining what's buck track and what's a doe track?
Okay. The buck tracks are going to be, you know, especially the older bucks, they're going to be necessarily larger. Although, in any area, there's always going to be those old barren does. They don't breed anymore, and they're old, and they get some big feet. Not all of them, but I've been fooled a lot of times by just the size of the track and the print. Mm-hmm. And I followed them, but I don't follow them long, because they're going to do something to make you determine that, because even some of those old does will have a big hoof, and they'll have those bigger dew claws. But typically, a mature buck's dew claws will be set perpendicular to the hoof, and the does will be almost parallel. And they'll never be, I shouldn't say never, but because nothing's never, but usually they're inside of the width of the hoof. Mature bucks will be wider than, if you see the dew claws and they're wider than the print, the back of the print. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you're going to get on it. I get on it because I'm saying it's a buck. But like I said, once in a while you'll hit one of them big old does. But the things I look for then is if the does will squat to urinate, and there'll be one little urine hole behind the back feet where they spread their feet, almost if you visualize your female dog squatting down to pee. Same idea.
Right.
You'll see that. The other thing is they won't be as wide in their stance or stagger between the tracks, and they feed more, because that's what they do. They just live to eat and whatever. A buck will be traveling more necessarily. You know, usually you're not going to get on a doe that's striking across country. You know, they'll feed along and they'll lay down, and you might come to, you know, beds every quarter or half a mile where they're just doing their own thing, you know. So usually that's when I get a combination of those things, I determine it's a doe, and that's the end of it.
Now, I want to get your take on this, because I've heard this by several people, and actually I had Jay Scott, I know you know who he is, from Big Buck Registry, on, and he said the same thing that I've been told, is that when a doe walks, she'll put her back legs, will go into her front, you know, where her front hoof print will. So the back print will be on top of the foot, almost completely on top of the front footprint. Where on a buck, it's slightly off.
No. That's any deer can be slightly off, but
okay.
A buck will be, there's a lot of bucks that'll be print for print, back foot and front foot. So that's another thing that you have to be mindful of, is the back feet are smaller than the front.
Right.
You know, their front feet are wider, not necessarily longer, but they usually are. And that's cutting the hole in the snow, especially in the deep snow. See, in the deep snow, you're going to see that cut hole where they step with their front feet, and the back foot goes in and leaves the print. So really what you're looking, when you're just looking at a print, You're looking at the back footprint until they stop and turn. They might make a rub on a tree. They stick a foot out until you can see the front foot. You'll see it's noticeably bigger.
Right.
And the other thing about those old bucks, I call them square-toed bucks, their back feet, the toes won't come together anymore. There'll be a space between the hoofs, and they'll look square. The toes just stick straight, and there might be a half an inch of space between them. Those are your old, mature bucks that their feet are, they get wore out. They get old, and their feet get sloppy and wore out, and that's how they walk. But it's not about one stepping exactly in another, because they all can do that. I think that's just maybe how they're built. Some of them is just they don't exactly step in them, but most deer do. Most all deer step almost exactly in their own prints.
Okay.
Moose do it, elk do it, all those animals, cloven animals do it.
Yeah, it's funny that you brought up elk, because this year, now, I've never actually gone and tracked a deer or an elk or anything to track them to shoot them, but I've used a lot of the things that you're talking about, you know, to help me determine which tracks to follow after I've made a shot, and like, let's say the blood sign's not good and so on and so forth. So this year I shot an elk in the late season bow hunt, and he was just, I hit him high, so he's bleeding all inside, and I basically, you know, he was with, I don't know, 30-some-odd cows or something like that, but I determined which track his was, you know, by size, and it's a little bit easier on elk because they're quite a bit larger than the cows, and the dew claws and all that stuff. It had just rained a bunch, so I followed it all in the mud, you know, a lot like falling in the snow. And, he went 400 yards before he piled up.
Wow.
But that's what allowed me to find him. And then every once in a while, as I was staying on that running track, I would find some blood here and there. And then I eventually found my arrow and so on and so forth. But it was the tracks themselves that actually led me to it. So, like, those basically the reason why I'm bringing this up is because the guys that are listening, you know, if you're kind of like listening just because it's entertaining to you, but you should be taking this information that Hal's sharing with you, and you can use it and apply it to different parts of, you know, different parts of the country. You may never go to Maine and, you know, track a deer and shoot it, but you may, you know, be in Montana, you may be in, you know, or doing a late hunt in Utah right now that's going on, the extended season. And there's tons of snow up there. It might be something that you can use, or like me, I used it when I, you know, to track an elk that I shot, and the shot was high. So,
yeah, exactly. I mean, once I get on a track, I look at the size of the print, but you guess what? There's other bucks in the woods with the same size print, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have to look and I actually kind of imprint in my mind exactly how that, the size of the print and how that buck walks, because a lot of them do walk differently. Some swing their feet more than others. Some drag their feet more than others. Some have a wider stagger stance. And once you imprint that in your mind, you won't lose that track. You know, if it gets mixed in with other tracks, it makes it easier to find the one you're on, even if you don't see the print.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I started doing is I always have my cell phone, is I take a picture of it.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm tracking, I take a picture of it. That way I can compare it if I lose something.
Yeah. You're one of them high-tech younger guys, see?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
So you guys hunt in flannel shirts, right? And no camouflage, just real old school style, right?
Yeah, we use wool because, you know, really when you're out in those elements like we have, I mean, you know, I know you get snow and stuff out west, like the mail, like all of that, but you can't beat wool clothing. I mean, I have had guided guys for 25 years, and I would always tell them, bring wool clothes. They show up with all the latest, greatest, newfangled synthetic material, and none of it can even compare to wool for a lot of reasons. And the main reason really is if it's waterproof enough so it keeps you dry, it's really noisy.
Right.
You know, you can brush your hands on it, and it might feel like velvet to you, but it doesn't matter when you're going through the bushes in the woods. Everything slaps against it. It makes a pop noise.
Right.
You know, lap and pop. You're never gonna get near a deer wearing that kind of stuff. And so wool is quiet. Other properties of wool, it's warm when it's wet. This year I fell in the river. I was tracked a buck to a river. It was a big river.
Oh, geez.
He went across. This was a week ago in the Adirondacks, 2 weeks ago. And it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and there was a river crossing a mile and a half away on a cable, and I couldn't have the time to go. So I tried to get across jumping on boulders that were underwater, and I stepped on one, and it rolled right upside down. There I was, right in the river, right up to my neck. And I got out, and I hunted the rest of the day with my wool clothes. I dumped one boot out. I had water in one boot because I tape them. And I hunted the rest of the day. I put my dry gloves on, and no problem. From the time I got back to the truck at dark, I really didn't even feel wet. A little bit on one arm, that was it. But you can't do that in any synthetic material. It'd be a life and death situation, you know. And the other thing people don't understand about wool is it's basically odor free or odor resistant. It doesn't absorb odor.
Right.
I know everybody's into this scent block, everything else, down, you know, all this stuff, and it's. You know, if you hunt other ways and you're sitting in a stand where your scent's radiating, maybe it's all right. But if you're traveling through the woods, your scent don't stick around more than 3 seconds anyways, you know. The wind is switching around. But wool naturally airs right out. You go stand in the fire with smoke in it, and 15 minutes later you can't smell smoke on you. I've had deer standing almost on my toes before and never smelt me with my wools on. So anyways, that's what we wear, and it's comfortable, and like I said, if you can't be comfortable hunting, you're never going to do what it takes to participate that way, you know?
Absolutely.
What are some of the things a guy can do to, like, practice, so to speak? I mean, aside from the obvious, you know, but it doesn't always snow, so... And you, most of the lot of guys that have listened to this podcast, they might not even see snow. They're like, hell, I live in Arizona, so for me to go see snow, I need to drive a couple hours.
Well, I guess if you don't live with the snow, unless you're going somewhere where there is snow, you can't really practice in the mud or the bare ground, because a track in that kind of conditions will almost last forever, you know.
Right.
There really is no way to practice unless you do have snow. Like I tell the guys that live out here that, you know, during the winter time, if you're trying to figure out, like, aging a track is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to practice aging a track, is you can send your dog outside, or you can go outside in the snow and in the evening or whatever, and walk around in the snow and go in the house, maybe go out at midnight, do it again, and then go look at those tracks in the morning and see what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
Look at them, feel them, step in a little bit of water or something. If you got a ditch in your yard, see how much it froze. That's really good practice. You don't have to practice on a deer track for that. It can be
right.
A dog track or a cat track or your own boot tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you an idea of... you know, how to age a track, but there really isn't, you can't really practice to what you're going to be up against when you're following a mature buck. up in the North Country. There's no practice for it. You've got to just, you're practicing when you do it. You're always practicing.
Right.
And some people get lucky and they pay attention, and you know, maybe the first year they're out there doing it, they kill a buck that way, and that's great, you know. And then they just, you know, it's just practice. Everything's practice. If you just tell a lot of people, another thing is you can read every book on it and watch every DVD on it, whatever you want, but until you go do it, it's still just a theory.
Right.
Know? So you got to get out there and do it. And quite frankly, that's why a lot of people don't do it, because it's not an easy sport, you know. It's really not. You gotta be gritty and tough. And it's almost like I could relate it to, like, I know the young people are all into all these extreme sports and stuff now. Well, tracking deer in the big woods is an extreme sport. And I'm telling you, you can compare it to about anything else you can do you think is extreme, because, one, you're going to have to be in shape. You might go 10, 15 miles in a day through the woods, stepping over blowdowns. It's not like easy walking in this woods. You know, you're crossing streams, you're going up mountains, and you got to go. You got to be able to physically do it. And you've also got to be prepared for any of the elements involved in it. You might have a nice snow and it's 30 degrees and it's nice. You might be hunting in zero weather. I've hunted in Ontario tracking at 40 below. Now, I'm going to tell you, it ain't much fun.
No.
It's not much fun at that temperature.
No, I don't think it would be.
No, it takes the fun out of it, but I've done it, and the one thing I learned about it is every blade of grass or raspberry bush, it sounds like you're snapping a log because it's so cold. You know, it's just, it's really hard to get one that way, but so you got to be prepared for all that stuff, and you know, physically as well as mentally prepared for it. You got to have the grit not to give up, because as I tell people, another thing is if you persist, even if you have other shortcomings, you know, you might not be in quite as good a shape, or you might be as quiet as somebody else in the woods. But if you persist and stick with it, eventually the law of averages is going to catch up with you. You track enough bucks, you're going to catch one in the right place to kill them eventually.
Right.
You eventually will. But I'm going to tell you, it's more rewarding. If I had a new guy that had never been tracking deer and took him out, put him on a track of a yearling buck with a spike or crotch horn, and he tracked that buck and killed that buck up here in the north, it's a far bigger accomplishment than sitting in a tree stand somewhere and shooting a 150-inch 8-pointer in a bean field. You see, I mean, I'm not trying to say it to diminish that as hunting, but I'm just saying, as far as accomplishment-wise, that is a big accomplishment.
Yeah.
Because it's taking the animal on in his own elements. It's not really waiting for him to show up at the right time, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
No, I hear you. I feel like I like all kinds of hunting. I tree stand hunt from time to time. Most of my hunting is done spot and stalk, you know, getting up high, finding them with optics, and then planting a stalk. But I do still hunting. I still do, you know, pretty much any tactic you can think of, I've tried or try to apply or use frequently. I definitely want to come to the Northwest and come track a buck in the snow and shoot one. I really want to do it. Do you think it's something that can be done with a bow?
I saw a picture on Facebook this year. One of the guys that's on our follows on Facebook shot one. I think he was in New Hampshire.
Okay.
But it's possible. But until you can do it with a rifle,
right?
I don't even know why you'd consider it with a bow. You know what I mean?
Right.
Doing it with a bow, I give that guy credit, because that's just taking it to the extreme level. I mean, I don't think that's an accomplishment that, I mean, you know, 0.1% of any hunter could even do that. So that's the category that's in, tracking one down and shooting it with a bow.
I think you just issued a challenge to a few guys that I know.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it is.
I just thought about it myself. I have to go do that now.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell you what. I'm gonna come hunt with you with the rifle. You're gonna show me how to do it, and then I'm gonna go back again the following year. I'm gonna try with the bow.
Yeah, you got to shoot one with a rifle first.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, get one with a rifle, and then say, okay, this the big challenge is the bow.
Yeah.
And, I've shot a lot of them with a rifle that I could have shot with a bow. But the other thing about a bow, the big problem is going to be is dragging it through the woods. You're going to have sticks caught in your bowstrings. You're going to be snapping a lot of stuff. I mean, you really have to be in the right kind of a place. You know what I mean? It's
mm-hmm.
be really, really tough to do it. But
Well, last question I got for you. Typically, what's the distance you shoot these deer at with the rifle?
Oh, usually 50 yards and under.
Yeah.
I've hunted Montana,
uh-huh.
Ontario, Michigan, up UP, Minnesota. I've never shot a buck. The furthest one I've ever shot was 125 paces down through the woods, and that was here in Maine, down through the hardwoods.
Hmm.
I haven't shot one beyond it in my life. I've shot one laying in its bed at 19 paces, never get out of his bed. But usually it's 50 yards. I'd say if you had to average it all out, it's 25 to 50 yards typically, you know.
Wow. So, that to me says it's very doable with the bow.
Yeah. I mean, if you can, then again, it's doable, but if you can get the right shot, because usually they ain't standing in the open at that distance, you know.
Right, no.
A lot of times, the buck I shot this year up here, when I saw it, all I could see was one antler and his nose is all I could see, the front of his face. And I had to lean out, and I could get about a 3-inch place on his neck to shoot at. Because he was behind this stump, I leaned out. I mean, you ain't getting that with a bow, you know what I mean?
No, definitely not.
Yeah, so that's why I say that bow thing would be like the ultimate challenge to track one and shoot it with a bow.
Well, it all sounds super cool to me, man. I really want to do it. I might have to come out and hunt with your outfit there. You're still guiding, right?
Nope.
Nope.
No, I sold my outfitting business 3 years ago right now, the 30th of December, 3 years ago. And
That sucked.
So I'm not guiding now. I took on a full-time position. I was doing part-time work with Remington, and I took a full-time position there. So that's what I do. I'm fortunate to be able to work from home for some stuff. And basically now that, in the fall, when I start deer hunting, I go, basically chase the snow around,
Yeah.
There's snow in the Adirondacks, or wherever there's some snow, I got a buddy I go with, and we go.
All right. Cool.
But still,
well,
Maine's my favorite place.
Well, it's your home turf.
Yeah,
it is. I can understand why. So... Well, I want to thank you very much for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. Where can our listeners find out more about you and maybe buy some of your books or your DVDs or anything?
Well, they can go right on our website at bigwoodsbucks.com. Just spell right out one word, bigwoodsbucks.com. We've got a Facebook page. We post articles. I just wrote an article about this year's hunt that got posted last night. I got my own Facebook page under my name. We just started with Instagram. We got a guy doing Instagram for us, so we're out there, easy to find, and lots of stuff to look at.
Nice. Well, good.
So we encourage the listeners to take up the challenge and try it.
For sure. I've been intrigued with it for my, like I said, for the better part of my life. It's something I've always known about or whatever, but I just never had. And I've kind of done it in some shape, way, or form before, but I've never, you know, gone and specifically with that idea, with that mindset in my head. Okay, it snowed today. I'm going to go try to track a buck and shoot it. But it's definitely something I'd like to do.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something else for all your listeners. If you learn and take the interest in not only tracking, but basically, you know, the skills involved with hunting the way we do in the big woods, you'll be able to, if you can hunt this way and kill bucks in the big woods, you'll be able to hunt any game in North America, probably the world, because it takes the skills involved will just translate back into those other game animals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I never hunted elk until 4 or 5 years ago, but it was, quite frankly, once I learned how, you know, the kind of the habits of them, what they did, it was fairly easy for me. You know what I mean? It's just,
mm-hmm.
once you learn this deer thing, everything else becomes a lot easier. So,
right.
You can learn these skills that we teach in the system and still you can apply them to hunting anywhere, you know?
Yep, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. That's why I do what I do. I try to learn a little bit from everybody and I kind of meld them all into my own little, toolbox of goodies and I call on them when I need them. When I'm presented with a situation, well, hey, what do I do? Oh, well, you know,
right.
I've heard of this or I've done this, or I've done that, and, you know, that's how you become more successful for sure.
All right.
So, well, Hal, thank you very much. I appreciate you being on, and I hope to talk to you soon. And one of these days, maybe I'll be lucky enough to come on with you. I'd love to do it. So.
All right. Thanks for having me on.